गुरुर्ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णु गुरुर्देवो महेश्वर गुरुर्साक्षात् परब्रह्म तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। गुरुर्मध्ये स्थिता माता मातृमध्ये स्थितो गुरु गुरुर्माता नमस्तेस्तु मातृगुरु नमाम्यहम् मातृगुरु नमाम्यहम्।
It is always easier to understand the principles of living through the eyes of those who we consider wise, that we consider who have lived the life to the fullest, who we consider to have lived the life to the most idealistic principles that we admire. Looking at their lives and examples of their experiences, we can learn, we can emulate, we can derive value. We cannot lead their lives, but we can alter our lives. We can transform our journey. The beginning and the end is the same, but the journey is individual. And it's the journey that matters. One such individual was Gandhi. He was a man of the century. He was born an ordinary man and left this world as an extraordinary man. As a man, he evolved beyond a humankind. So what did he derive his value system from? What did he learn his life lessons from? Who did he consider his masters that he emulated, that he changed to incorporate into the modern living that made him such a unique individual? One such value system that he used was the teachings of Sant Narasimha Mehta. His favorite bhajan was Vaishnava Janato Tenere Kahiye. We have heard that bhajan over and over. He used to have that bhajan sung at the beginning of his evening prayer and sometimes even at the end of his evening prayers, and made that the focal point of his life journey. We have heard it often. We have looked at it superficially. But did we ever think about what it means? Did we ever think about what Gandhi may have learned from it? See if we can examine it. See if we can understand it. See if we can look into details of what the teachings of Narasimha Mehta was.
Vaishnava janato tenere kahiye je peed parai jaane re par dukhe up कार करे तो ये मन अभिमान न आने रे। वैष्णव जन तो तेने कहिए।
वैष्णव जन, मैन ऑफ गॉड, कम्स फ्रॉम द रूट वर्ड विष्णु। विष्णु मीन्स दैट विच सस्टेन्स। द होल प्रिंसिपल, द होल world that we live in is based on principles of one becoming three, becoming infinite. As the world folds back on itself, the three The infinite becomes three, and the three becomes one. Give you an example. Doesn't matter what part of this universe you look at, whether it is the universal consciousness, singularity, becoming Om, becoming three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh, and then becoming infinite, the world that we see around us. Then eventually, when the time comes, the infinite will fold back onto three, back onto one. In Christianity, you can see the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. In physical world, we see the electron, proton, and the neutron. If you broke down every physical particle, you can trace it down to these three basic particles. In the mental world, we are made up of three mental attributes, sattva, tajas, and rajas. Tamas and rajas. So if we look at everything, everything boils down to three. And the center is the journey. First is the beginning, last is the end, and the center is the journey. We are talking about the journey. How does this principle influence our journey? Since we are talking about the journey, we are talking about the sustainer, one that sustains this journey, which is represented by Vishnu. Vaishnava Jana. Who is he who makes this journey on the path of righteousness, on the path of spirituality? Not on the path of religion, on the path of spirituality. Religion separates, spirituality binds all living beings in this universe. Je peed parai jaane re, he who understands the suffering of others. What is the suffering of others? Is it what you see when somebody is in pain because that person has a headache or a migraine or a broken foot? Is he who is suffering, who is mentally anguished because he doesn't have enough money, doesn't have a good family life, doesn't have a good health? Is he the one who is suffering? Who is he that is suffering? Here's what Kabirji said. The whole world is happy and asleep. Kabir has awakened and is crying. Kabirji says the whole world is suffering, but they think they are not. They are asleep. So according to the definition of Kabirji, he is suffering who has not understood his true self, even though he doesn't realize that he is suffering. Superfluously, superficially, externally, he may find that he is happy because he does not understand any better. To wake up in the morning, to get ready, to go to work, to earn a living, to pay the bills, to raise a family, go to sleep, do that day after day, and die one day. Same thing, take another life, do the same thing over and over. How long, if we were to retain, just think about it, if we were to retain the memory of all our lives, would we be content with this existence of repetition of the same thing over and over and over and over? Because we do not remember, because we do not understand, because we cannot recollect the memories of our past lives, we think all of this is new. Every day that we live is a new day, is a new life, is something that we have never done before. And so we think of it as something that is exciting. But those who have awakened, those who have become enlightened, those who have understood what we have been through, and that's why Bhagwan Mahavir and Bhagwan Buddha, both of them did it. They made their disciples go through a meditative process called past life experiences. They had them sit in meditation and showed them what they have been, where they have been in the past lives, and have showed them that there is no reason to make the same mistakes again. Awaken, arise, and start a day new, and understand that you've been there before. Je peed parai jaane re. He who understands that everyone else, even though they do not see it, are suffering from the cycle of life, death, and rebirth. How can I contribute? How can I help to awaken them? There is no reason for the great individuals, for the great beings like Buddha and Mahavir and Christ and all of those people to come on this world. They have no reason to. They have no desires. And it is a desire that makes us take the birth. It is the software that drives the regeneration of the hardware. They have no software. They have no programming left anymore that requires the hardware to be upgraded. Yet, they do. Out of compassion. Out of seeing the suffering of others. That how can we go back and contribute and to awaken those who are still asleep? If you get a chance, see the movie Matrix, in which Morpheus, the guru, tells Neo, who is yet unawakened, that only thing I can give you is a choice. You can take a blue pill or a red pill. That's all I can give you. I cannot tell you what lies at the other end. You have to experience it for yourself. But I can help you. I can point the way to you so you can awaken yourself by making a choice. So even though the great ones come, they cannot awaken us unless we choose to be awakened. Je peed parai jaane re. He is in the journey of righteousness. He is on the path of true salvation, who has seen the suffering of those that are traveling with him. Paradukhe upakar kare toye man abhiman na jaane re. He goes and helps others, yet does not take the credit for what he does. Selfless action. Once the credit is taken, then the credit for suffering must also be taken. It is a common human nature, when we succeed, when we accomplish something, we say, I did it. It is through my effort and my work and through my intelligence and through my hard work that I accomplish what I have. But when we suffer, we say it is God's will, that it is my destiny, that it is the bad karma, that it is the suffering that I'm going through because of my family, my poor job, poor family, poor financial circumstances, whatever external circumstances may be. We don't realize that when we give the cause of our suffering to an external environment, to an external entity, we are in essence enslaving ourselves to the external entity. If we say that my job is the cause of my suffering, we are slave of our job. If we say my family is the cause of my suffering, our family is our master and we are the servant. But our spirituality gives us the power to become our own master, to become our own decision maker, to take responsibility for our own goods and bads. As soon as we start taking the responsibility of who we are and what we are and where we are, suddenly the conflict ends. Then there is no reason to put the blame out there. There is no reason for conflict. Whatever I'm going through is through my doing and my doing alone. The matter ends. Now I am in charge. Now I have the power to change. Change only one thing. Change myself. Not change the circumstances, but change myself. How I react to it. Whether I take a blue pill or a red pill, it's my choice. But once you make that choice, there is no going back. That change is inevitable. That change is irrevocable. The change is a transformation that cannot be undone. If we walk into a room that is dark and there is a rope on the floor and we become frightened thinking it's a snake, All we have to do is turn the light on to understand that it's a rope and it's no longer a snake. Once you turn the light on, and then turn the light back off and go outside and come back in, are you going to be frightened again by seeing that rope on the floor? Even though the vision is the same, circumstances are the same, everything is the same, but you are not the same. You have become transformed. You are now enlightened. Even though everything is the same, you no longer are frightened. You cannot be, even if you wanted to. Even if somebody is with you and tells you there is a snake there, you cannot become frightened. There is a saying in Western culture, even in India, that time heals all wounds. We hear that all the time. It's the biggest fallacy there is. Time doesn't heal all wounds. There must something else occur in that time, in that passage of time, in order for it to heal all wounds. Self-transformation must occur. Just think about it. We lose a loved one and we forget about it a year down the road. When we lose somebody else close to us, do we suffer the same way we did 1 year ago? Yes, we do. What happened? Time passed, but we are still the same. So the suffering continues to occur over and over and over and over, because we have not changed. If we had become transformed after the first trauma in life and become awakened, when the next trauma comes, even if somebody tells you, why aren't you crying? Why aren't you suffering? Your loved one died. You would say, yes, I feel the pain that everybody else is feeling. But now I'm no longer that I was before. I'm no longer insensitive. I'm not insensitive to the suffering of others. But I also see the truth that death doesn't exist. It is merely a transformation of one form into the other. It is an inevitable part of every living creature. And when our death comes, we no longer are frightened at the same time. So the time doesn't heal all wounds. The transformation that takes place as a result of passage of time, and that is dependent on us and us alone, that is what heals all wounds. Another saying, same way, practice makes perfect. Another myth, practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. We learn the wrong things all our lives over and over and over and over, and we become very good at doing the wrong thing. And we become expert at doing the wrong thing. Yet, change doesn't occur. Suffering remains. We ask ourselves, why do I come to the temple, do the aarti, read the scripture every single day of my life? I've been doing that for 50 years. Why am I still suffering? Why nothing has changed? Because we have done the wrong thing over and over and over and over. We have not gone through the transformation that is necessary for fundamental change that must occur on the inside. All it takes is a change, not repetition of the same thing over and over. This is a guide. It's a point that tells you which way to go. It's not the end. It's not the journey. It is a beginning. We must make the journey. The journey is in here, not out there. Vaishnava janato tene re kahiye. He is the man of God who understands this journey. Mana abhimanana anere. He does all these things, yet doesn't take the responsibility for it. Doesn't sustain, doesn't feed his ego that I am the doer of what is happening around me. I may be the instrument of the infinite wisdom, the infinite energy, the great cosmic consciousness, the great plan, that runs this universe in such perfection. I'm a puzzle that fits perfectly in itself. But I'm not the doer. It is not my doing that causes the change about me. Only thing that I can change is myself. Share something with you, what Buddha said. Nirvana is not an I object. This is why so many people throughout the centuries have sought after it, but have not obtained the bliss. You cannot want nirvana. It's a desire. You cannot choose to become, to pursue nirvana. Then it is working towards unobtainable. You cannot deserve nirvana. It's egotism. You cannot demand nirvana. It's a lust. Nirvana is when you are not. Cease to be and become nirvana. All of this universe, from the smallest subatomic particle to the largest planet, is vibrating with an energy. You too are pulsating with this energy. The ancient yogis gave this energy a name, prana. The ancient Chinese called it qi. Look around yourself. Experience the energy pulsation in every way that makes up the field of vision. Look to the movement of the clouds. Touch the unseen wind. Embrace the raindrop, the glow of the sun, the illumination of the light bulb, the movement of the passing car. Everything, man-made or otherwise, pulsates with this unseen energy. Lose your individual pulsation, join the universal vibration, and meet nirvana. It is said in our ancient scriptures, that we are swimming in a river of time. Our ego, our misidentification of ourself with our external being, whether it's a physical being, whether it's a mental being, or whether it's an intellectual being, but it's a misidentification of ourselves with who we are that tends to separate us, that tends to separate our synchronization of our energy pulsation with that of the river. We are swimming upstream. Everything that is in sync with the river, like the wood and the tree and the plants and the animals and the whole universe that is swimming with the flow of the river, is constantly hitting us on our head because we are swimming upstream and we are fighting it, making our life journey that much more difficult. All we have to do is turn around, resynchronize our energy to that of this universe. And the same block of wood that was hitting us in the head, now we can hold on to, and we don't have to make the effort to swim anymore. And it becomes our salvation. It is depends upon the direction in which we swim. The senses are the windows to the journey outward. All we have to do is turn those senses inward and make the journey in. To the flow of the river.
Sakala lokama sahune vande nindana kare ke nire.
Sakala lokama sahune vande. Siyaram mai sab jag jani karahu pranam jori jugpani. Tulsidas ji says in Ramcharitmanas, seeing the entire universe as the divine manifestation of himself, I bow to the universe. How can we develop that attitude? How can we develop that vision? Only one way. Only one way to see everyone as one, and that is to see the inner essence of every living creature. If we see who people are on the outside, only thing we are going to see is the external differences. We end up becoming expert at seeing differences, and we lose people's similarity. And the only way to find that union, only way to find who I am, who is who everyone else is to see the essence. And the reason why we join our hands when we meet somebody else is for the same reason, that this eternal energy, this eternal being bows to the eternal being in you, for there is no difference between us.
Nindana kare ke nire.
When we start to criticize others, we are seeing the difference. We are saying that I am better than he is. I am here, they are there. I decline to believe in what somebody else is believing in. Anytime we see the separation, anytime we see the difference, anytime we see the conflict, anytime we see the opposites, we start to create animosity. And if everything came from the same divine being, how can there be anything in the universe that doesn't belong? Yin and yang, the good and bad, the day and night, are all the same. They all came from the same. There is a place for everything. Would you ever know what day was if you never saw the night? Would you ever know what happiness is if you never had ever suffering in your life? We are bound by the duality. We are bound by the two. We are bound by the opposites. That's the nature of this physical universe. And as long as we are in this physical universe, we cannot overcome the principles of the physical universe. As long as we are in this physical form, we have to abide by the laws of the physical universe. But we have to understand they all come from the same. Try to see beyond what is on the outside. Develop the vision to see the seed within the fruit. See the fruit within the tree. And see the seed within the tree. And when you see the seed, see the same tree and the fruit within it. Instead of seeing each individual for external appearances for who they are.
Thoughts place obstacles in your path to realization. Why? Because thoughts are beliefs. From beliefs come the concept of right and wrong. From right and wrong comes conflict. I know, you do not. My way is right because the scriptures and my teachers say so. That means you are wrong. Thoughts never lead to realization. No thoughts, no conflicts. No conflict, the path to nirvana is revealed. There is no right and wrong. Everything is as it is, as it should be. My father used to give a very good example at one time. He used to say, if somebody cuts you with a knife, is it a good thing or a bad thing? We look at it from external point of view. It is neither good, neither bad. It simply is. If somebody cuts you with a knife and steals your money, it's a bad thing. Somebody cuts you with a knife to remove an infected appendix, it's a good thing. It is not the action that matters. It is the intent behind the action that determines who you are and what your journey is going to be. You are born, you live, you die. Your concept of self only exists in the interim between birth and death. Thus, the self that you call self is not eternal.
This self is temporary. Why do we place so much emphasis on catering to the needs of the temporary? Let go of the temporariness and meet nirvana.
Vachakach man nishchal rakhe dhana dhana janani teni re vaishnav jan to tene kahiye
vach kach man. Gandhiji used to say all the time, the difference between he who is not yet realized and he who is realized is only one. He who is realized has a complete synchronization between all of his beings, between his body, his tongue, his mind, and his spirit. They all vibrate with one and only one energy. There is no separation. There is no thought that is different than the tongue, than the action. They all vibrate at the same vibration. When we start to live with the eternal identification of ourselves with our spirit, the change occurs within us. The words that come out, the actions that come out, they in themselves become divine, because they are no longer the actions that are generated by the body or the mind or the intellect. They are coming from somewhere else. They are coming from a software. They are coming from the spirit, the eternal energy that's inside of us, that is constantly in touch with the universal consciousness. And therefore, whatever we do, whatever we think, whatever we utter, it becomes the cosmic wish.
Ram naam shu taali re lagi, sakal tirath tena tan mare.
He who has become one with the name of God, one with the inner spirit of God, his entire body now becomes the pilgrimage. Vade vedvani re.
He who has become one with the inner self, what he speaks becomes the language of the Vedas.
He doesn't have to make predictions. What he says becomes the truth. I remember when I was growing up, we used to spend a lot of time in the ashram of Ma Anandamayi. She was the spiritual master of my father. She was a Bengali saint who had reached that point of total self-realization, who had evolved to the point of being spirit-centered 100% of the time. And people would make special efforts to be with her all the time, to make her utter words, because whatever she would say, so would it become. It is not that person would predict what is going to be by seeing or having visions. Rather, whatever they say thus becomes the event.
Samadrashti ne trushna tyagi parastri jene matre jihvatha ki asatya na bole paradhan nav jhale haath re vaishnav jan to tene kahiye
samadrashti ne trishna tyagi. In Gita, Arjun asks Krishna, sthitaprajnasya kabhasha samadhisthasya keshava.
O Keshav, who is the man of steady wisdom who is situated by his spirit into his spirit? And Krishna says,
sthitaprajnasya kabhasha samadhisthasya keshava sthitadhi kim prabhashena kimasito vrajeta kim.
How does he speak? How does he act? How do I recognize him?
Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan.
Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. Manogatan kaman. He who has overcome the desires born out of his own mind.
Atmanye atmana tishthah sthita prajnascha uchyate.
And who is steadfast by his spirit, into his spirit, not recognizing anything else as being true, is the man of steady wisdom. Is the man who then, whenever he speaks, speaks without taking sides, speaks without favoritism, speaks and does things without saying, I'm going to do something for him and not for him. He is now a universal source of good. He is no longer focused on one part. See, there are four levels of love that are described. Not all of them are love, but we'll use the word love. First one is the physical action, where there is no love involved whatsoever, where there is only desire to drain somebody else's energy for personal need. It's one-sided. The second is the love that we call between the loved ones, between father and mother, husband and wife, children and parents, where there is two-way street, but there is still a desire to expect something in return. If I walk into the house and I expect my children to run and hug me that I came from a long day's work, and instead, if they come and spit on my face, I'm not going to hug them back. Because I'm expecting something from them, even though they are my children. There is an expectation, even though they are loved ones. Even though there may be some degree of selflessness, it is still a selfishness because you are separating them as somebody else who is yours compared to a neighbor who is not yours. There is this dualism that we have created between mine and not mine. Then the next level comes where there is a little less of I, there is little more of you, where we do good, social good, where we give charity, where we don't know where the money is going to be used. It may be a tsunami came and somebody's, or an earthquake in Haiti came and we gave some donation. We gave something to the temple. We don't know what the temple is going to do about it. They can be used for anybody else. We did something good, where we didn't expect anything in return immediately, but we still expect. That I don't do good, I may not receive anything now, but my next life will be better. That I'm collecting good karma. I am collecting. It is still I. I hasn't left the equation yet. And then comes the saints. The total and absolute love called compassion. Where it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a murderer, a thief, a good person, a saint, doesn't matter who you are, anyone who comes in that environment, they receive the good from them. Absolute and total unbiasedness. Samadrashti. Samadrashti ne trushna tyagi. Desires. As we talked about before, desires are the root of sorrow. Expectations are the root of sorrow. Ram and Lakshman are sitting in jungle, traveling in the days of their exile. And Lakshman asks Ram, can you explain to me where the suffering is coming from? Why do people suffer? Where is this? What is Maya?
what are all these illusions and delusions and misconceptions that people live all their lives with? What is the cause of it? And Ram explains only in one sentence. Main aur mor tor tu maya. I and mine, you and yours, that separation is the cause of all ill and cause of all unhappiness. And the only way that separation can come is if we misidentify ourselves with who we are in this external shell. We are made up of multiple layers of body. The physical body is the outer one. Then there is a mental image of who we are. Then there is an intellectual image of who we are. And there is a causal image of who we are. Then inside, innermost shell is the pure light. Main aur mor tor tu maya. Samadrashti ne trishna tyagi. See what Buddha says. Eternal peace is a choice. The world will give you a million reasons not to be peaceful if you allow external images and negative stimuli to dominate your emotions. Next time you find yourself upset, stop everything. Be still. Let your mind rest. Do not let momentary emotions control you. Catch them and watch them fly away like a beautiful world, like a beautiful bird across a scenic horizon. Understand that whoever or whatever has led you to this unpeaceful state is not worthy of controlling your life. Allow yourself to feel peace, even in the most unpeaceful events, and enlightenment will be yours. If you embrace cosmic perfection, understanding that everything is as it should be, then you enter into what is known as the path of least resistance. In this state of mind, you no longer fight with yourself over your impurities. You do not battle with the world over injustice. You do what you do, what is nature of life. But you do not become lost in its results. Not lost in the results, they are allowed to happen. Not lost in the results, they are allowed to unfold as they may. Allowed to happen, there is no conflict in you, because you experience the perfection of each moment of your life and that of the universe. With no conflict, everything is as should be, including you. Step into the path of least resistance. Shunyata is the Sanskrit word which describes spiritual voidness, the state beyond conceptual reality. Shunyata is known to be the stepping stone into nirvana. The moment shunyata becomes desire in the mind of zealot, however, the techniques are designed for its obtainment, and the true spiritual purpose is lost. Desires and techniques, all in cases, keep you from nirvana because they bind you to the doing, not undoing. Let go of the desires. Forget the techniques. Embrace the spiritual voidness and know nirvana. The worldly person passes through much of their existence striving for a better life. But what does it equal? Unfulfilled desires and regrets. Monks pass through much of their existence striving for enlightenment. But what does it equal? The realization that they are not pure enough, not holy enough, or possess enough good karma to meet nirvana. Very different paths, same outcome. The key factor, striving. Let go of striving and step into nirvana.
Moha maya vya pe nahi jene dradha vairagya jena man mare ram naam shu taali re lagi sakal tirath tena tan mare vaishnav jan to tene kahiye.
Renunciation is described in many cultures. Giving up of sensual objects, becoming ascetic, becoming simple, allowing your life to become simplistic. But what does it really mean? Even we, one of the rituals that we do on a regular basis is to eat simple foods. We call it fasting. Whether we give up food or we eat simplistic food, we call it fasting. But what we do not understand is the difference between fasting and upavasa. Upavasa is not fasting, it's anashana. Fasting is anashana. Not taking food is fasting. It's not upavasa. The word upavasa was used in ancient language to describe fasting, but that's not what it means. Upa means in front of, vasa means to live. Upavasa means to live in front of yourself, not fasting. The ancient masters who sat in meditation and who saw themselves by entering within themselves found such bliss that they no longer were hungry. They were no longer desirous of food. They were no longer desirous of external things to sustain the body. They were no longer in need to support the needs of the body. So people who saw them from the outside saw that here is a person sitting in meditation, not eating and not drinking, yet there is an incredible glow on their face. So people started to emulate. They started to copy. Nanakji, when he sat in meditation and he saw the realization of God within himself, he exclaimed out of love, out of prostration for his master. He said, Vaheguru. He cried, oh my master, is this what you showed me? How can I repay what you gave me? But people, his disciples who were sitting outside, they saw that he uttered the word Vaheguru. So they all started repeating Vaheguru, Vaheguru, Vaheguru. So when you go to Gurudwara, that's all you hear is Vaheguru, Vaheguru, Vaheguru. It's repetition, has no meaning whatsoever. Because it is not coming from the depth of the inner being of person who is saying it. It is an emulation. It's an external copy. So copying, yes, some lifestyles of the great masters are worth copying. It gives us a guideline of what is right and what is wrong. But don't expect that to lead you to salvation. That's where we make the mistake. That by fasting, I'm going to become self-realized. By not eating, I'm going to become like the great masters. You will get a healthier body. You will get a cleaner body, and cleaner body promotes cleaner thoughts. But it is you who must make the transformation from the inside. You must reach the level when you are so steadfast within yourselves that the food no longer is important, that the food falls apart, falls away. You don't have to give it up When you remember, when we have to give something up, it means we are attached to it. Just think about it. Think about the logic. Only thing that you have to give up are things that you are attached to. We never give up garbage. Never. We don't say, I'm going to give up garbage today. We're not attached to it. It makes no difference. It is irrelevant whether we have it or we don't have it. Idea of giving up doesn't arise if we are not attached to it. The idea of giving up only arises if we are mentally attached to it. If you understand that concept, then giving up becomes irrelevant. Whether it happens or doesn't happen makes no difference. My job, whether I ate something today or didn't eat something today, makes no difference. My job is to, how can I devote entire day today? If it's a holy day, how can I devote my entire day in understanding, in contemplating, in trying to see and observe myself for who I am? Renunciation. For thousands of years, people have renounced their worldly possessions, attempting to be free themselves of constraint of the material world in order that they may truly enter into the spiritual path. What are possessions? Temporary physical objects, which, like human life, only last as long as they last. You can give them up if you want to, but does giving them up make you more holy? No. Giving them up only makes someone who has given them up. Nirvana does not come from releasing your hold on the physical objects, which simply go back into the energies of circulation of the material world where they came from. Nirvana comes from not caring one way or the other about the material possessions. It is the attitude, not giving up, it is the attitude towards it that dictates what happens to us. Here's what Gita says. Jayato vishayam tunsaha sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha kamat krodho bhijayate krodhat bhavati sammoha sammohat smruti vibhramaha smruti bhramshat buddhinasho buddhinasha pranashyati. Jayato vishayam tunsaha. O Arjun, man thinking of sensual objects develops attachment for them. Whatever you see on the outside, whether it's a Lexus or a house or whatever it may be, we see ourselves possessing that object. We develop attachment for it. Looking at it and admiring it is nothing wrong with it. That's not where the bondage comes. It is when we start to internally attach ourselves, see ourselves possessing it, see ourselves owning it, see ourselves getting tied to it, that's when the problem starts. And how does the problem start? What does it create? Here's the step of events that occur. Jayato vishayam tunsaha sangaste shupajayate. Man thinking of essential objects develops attachment to them. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. From attachment develops lust, wanting, not letting it go, becoming obsessed by it. Sammohat, then comes anger. When we desire something that we cannot obtain, we become angry. From anger comes delusion. From delusion comes loss of intelligence, inner intelligence. From loss of inner intelligence, loss of awareness of who we really are. And from loss of awareness comes utter destruction, where we become tied into the cycle of life, death, and rebirth. But if we see everything for what it is, that it too has a temporary life, just like this body does, and this desire is a temporary thing that is only going to last as long as this body is going to last? And how can I grow beyond it? We talked about before last time that it is the software and hardware connection. That software has a longer life than hardware does. If you have a Microsoft Windows, whatever it may be, the hardware that you're using, the computer, wears out faster, but the program lasts longer. Once you wear out the computer, you need to buy a newer, more faster processor so that the program can execute and do what it needs to do. Eventually, that hardware wears out and you need a new hardware. But eventually, you need to upgrade and upgrade and upgrade and upgrade. Just like that, desires are the software that when they become unfulfilled, when they remain unfulfilled at the end of this lifetime, at the end of the hardware of this body, life of the hardware of this body, then the desires don't die. Even in the old body, desires are still young because they have a longer life than the body does. So 80-year-old body still has a 20-year-old desires. So it chooses the next body that is going to try and fulfill those desires that remain unfulfilled. So we choose our own bodies for the future. And therefore, the only answer to not having the next birth is not to have the desire. No software, no need for hardware. No desire, no birth. We choose our own destiny. We have been given a choice. We have been given an opportunity to make a difference. Vaishnava janato tene rekahiye. He is the man of God, the man of true inner self, the man who is traveling the path in the right way, making an example for everybody else, leaving his footprint for the others to emulate, who follows these steps. And you can recognize that person and maybe learn something from that person who is going through these steps. And he is the one where all of these pilgrimages are in him. He doesn't have to go anywhere. Triveni Sangam, that's described in our scriptures, where Ganga, Yamuna, and Saraswati, three rivers meet, is not out there in the Calcutta area somewhere. It's in our body. The focal point of our meditative energy and attention is the center of our forehead, where Ganga, Yamuna, and Saraswati, that comes at the rise of the nostril, those three focal points, Ingla, Pingla, and Sushumna, are the three nadis which are described in the scriptures during the description of meditation, where when they three meet, you see the light. And that light rises from the Nabhi Chakra, Muladhara Chakra, the first house of the energy where Kundalini resides. And it's the awakening of the intelligence. The awakening of the Kundalini is the prime purpose, the prime directive of all those who are seekers. Otherwise, there is no difference between us and the animal kingdom. They have social structure, we have social structures. They raise their young, we raise our youngs. They save for the rainy day, we save for the rainy day. They have intelligence, we have intelligence. They build complicated, complex housing, we build complicated and complex housing. Where is the difference? The difference is only one. We are given a choice to be conscious of our own consciousness. And becoming conscious of our own consciousness is what awakening of intelligence, awakening of Kundalini is. Vaishnava janato tene rekahiye. He who has become awakened, he who has begun the path to recognize who he is for its true nature and begun to recognize others for who they are in the essence. May God give us wisdom to see who we are in our spiritual sense. Hari Om, that's it.
Jai Jirendra. Before we do some temple announcements, I would like to call Satish Bhai Shah to speak a couple of words.
First of all, Dr. Pathak, thank you very much for giving a wonderful lecture. We all enjoyed it very much, and we look forward to hear from you in future more often. Geeta and myself appreciate everybody for coming here and sharing our grief. Losing a family person is very difficult and unforgettable. However, the memory stays inside the heart forever. My brother was 75 years old, very happy person, enjoyed his life thoroughly, and was a very, very religious person also. We pray to God that he take care of him and rest his soul peacefully. And once again, thank you very much, everybody, for coming here and sharing our grief.
Kirti Devi.